Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Puyatmann und da!
For the final time this calendar year, we bring to you the Spider Bundesliga podcast. What an incredible year it has been of football, and it's fair to say that the Christmas break comes at the perfect time. On today's episode of the Spider Bundesliga podcast, we will be discussing all the action from match day 18, the commencement of the Rückrunde, but of course it is the final match day of what has been an incredible 2021. As always, alongside me to discuss all the action from what was an entertaining weekend of football, it's the one and only Eva Lottebola. Eva, good morning. How are you today?
I'm very, very well, thank you. I mean, it's 2 days before Christmas for normal folks. I know all of you are celebrating on the 25th. Blah, blah, blah. So obviously very stressful. So this is my only free day this week. So I'm very happy I can spend it with our listeners and obviously with you and with the best league in the world. I think we've seen some surprising results. Still a bit pissed at Darmstadt because they stole away my kick tip win. Well, it would have been my first time I actually won it. And yeah, Tobias Kempe were like, yeah, no, we don't want that. So yeah, this is in the 19th plus third. I think I was more robbed of anything than Regensburg was in this game. but besides that, I mean, we know since yesterday that the games behind closed doors will return for, we don't know how long. I assume at least January and half of February or something like that, which obviously sucks, but on the other hand, it's very understandable. I mean, very looking forward to just coaches screaming at each other, as well as players. It's going to be very fun. I mean, the first result we're talking about is actually one very surprising one already, and to say with the words of the American rock band Offspring, let the good times roll.
Yes, and let the good times roll as we make our way to Kiel as they took on St. Pauli. I guess this is one of the other Finn Bartels derbies that we can count. This as a Finn Bartels derby, I believe. Yep, we're going to count it because it is true.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, he played for St. Pauli, so, I mean, you know, let's give it to him. And it's ironic that he would score in one of his two different derbies that he plays in. Kiel 3, St. Pauli 0. A bit of a rotten way to end 2021 for St. Pauli, who, for the majority of this season anyway, have been a cut above pretty much everybody in the league. Kiel, who, of course, have struggled for the majority of, get a vital win. Finn Bartels opened the scoring on 8 minutes, his third goal of the campaign. Then Finn Porath got his third goal of the campaign in similar fashion. Both were coming off saves and pretty much pushed in. So literally any goal that I score in FIFA. Benedikt Pickler got his sixth goal of the campaign in stoppage time of the first half. And it was game, set and match. I think the biggest takeaway from this game really was how poor St. Pauli were. Initially in the early phase, they had a couple of chances, but they were comprehensively outplayed where it mattered. They defended pretty ordinarily, and they just couldn't get anything going. And as a result, a bagel for them and 3 points for Kiel.
Yeah, and I mean, it was kind of a revenge and for the 3-0 win for St. Pauli in their opening game in this season. And I mean, still, sometimes you see how a season starts out and you can kind of, make predictions on how the season is going. I mean, for St. Pauli, we're kind of right. I think for Kiel, we still haven't found the right answer yet. And still, I mean, it was a surprising result. I compared it on Twitter. I compared it to the 3-0 defeat for Armenia against St. Pauli 2 years ago when they got promoted in the end. Nevertheless, so this is shouldn't be necessarily something that brings them down. I mean, you sometimes it really helps to see before the winter break that where you can improve, that this is not a self-runner. We have been saying this forever, basically. But Bakir was really, really impressed. I mean, their transitional play was very, very good. They were very quick on the rebound. I mean, this is how they scored the first two goals. Very, very quick and reacting. I think you can't really, especially for the first two goals, can't really blame Vasi. I don't think it's his fault. I think it's more that the rest of the players are kind of hoping that whoever is close to the rebound is offside. I thought that was very poor. There were very strong three counter attacks, especially in the first half. For the third goal, I didn't really know where to start. I think you can either start with a good for Q, because I think by the pass by Sterner, I think it was his first game in the lineup. For Kiel, the pass by Sterner to Pichler was really, really well timed. But on the other hand, I like that they quickly figured out that St. Pauli only had like one last defender that was kind of securing that high line. And you shouldn't do that. Like, this is something. Kiel has been pretty ordinary this season, but we have seen under Rapp, they're very, very good in transitional play, and you should really have a backup there. And it was, as mentioned, perfect pass to Pichler. For that third goal, I'm not sure what you think, but I think it's not a clear mistake by Vasi. But if he comes out, in my opinion, he has to put a bit much more effort into actually stopping Pichler than he did. He stays very tiny in this positioning of the body, not really, he's leaving the way open for Pichler, and then he's not quick enough in going back. And at that stage, as mentioned, it's not only his fault, it's the rest of the defense as well. And I was very impressed by the second half. And I mean, you kind of had the feeling it was a copy of the Darmstadt game. He looked at it and was like, okay, if we manage to get one or two goals very early in the game, it's going to be very difficult for St. Pauli, because up until now, they haven't really found a way how to react if a team has a very dominant first half and actually uses those chances. And in the end, it could have been even higher. I mean, St. Pauli couldn't have really been disappointed if it would have been a 4 or even a 5-0, because he was that dominant. And yeah, I really like that.
Yeah, I think they really had a very strong game plan. They acknowledged that they weren't going to be the high possession team. They sat back. They defended very well. They managed the early storm. And once they were able to take the lead, they really dictated into what St. Pauli could and couldn't do in possession. And it became increasingly clear that that's going to be I think that's the best identity that Kiel can go with going forward. Really enjoyed watching Lewis Holtby actually throughout this game. He was loads of fun. It's just exciting to see him, I guess not back to his best, but just provided some great energy in midfield. And, you know, he was involved in the movement for the second goal. And there was a lot to like about what Kiel did. They kept the clean sheet, and we know we've been a bit unsure about them defensively throughout this season, especially... this week they played a back three with Teske playing as the central player in that three with Lorenz and Neumann, and you just were unsure if it was going to work, and it worked a treat. The fullbacks, the wingbacks were really, really good in this game as well, and honestly, I don't think they even had a bad player. Even their substitutes had an impact, and a really positive way to end what has been a pretty tricky 2021 or the end of for them. But St. Pauli are pretty poor, but they still enter the winter break on top of the table. The team that is only a point behind them now is Darmstadt. A win at Jan Regensburg on the weekend ensured that they would have a nice cushion to the chasing pack. Goals from Emir Karic and Tobias Kemper, as Eva alluded to earlier, to the chagrin of her kick tip, was enough. And Tobias Kemper's goal, by the way, if it was any goal to destroy someone's win in a kick tip, it would be that one. A really glorious goal in the 93rd minute, cutting inside and scoring wonderfully past a very, very busy Alexander Meyer. There's two ways to look at this. We look at Darmstadt. It's been a very, very good second half of the first part of the season for them. They've looked very, very strong. But for Jan Regensburg, it has fallen. I think Lewis Ostrowski mentioned it best in his kind of Hinrunde review on Bundesliga Fanatic, that it was a question of whether they could sustain this in what was an extraordinarily strong start for them. And the answer clearly is no. Five defeats in their last six, very much showcasing that it is almost back to reality for Jan Regensburg.
Yeah, and as you've mentioned, we've kind of asked that question plenty of times at the beginning of the season. And although this is still a pretty good season for Jan, those last results are a bit worrying, especially if you look at the game. Darmstadt had to change up the lineup, similar to Regensburg as well, because Ilka Pfeiffer was injured. Seidel, I think, he didn't do what he wanted, maybe. But it's obviously very difficult. There was another player who was new in the lineup with Emir Karic, especially in the second half after his goal. I really liked him. In the first half, Regensburg did not have a single shot on target from inside the box, and I think only just not very lot of dangerous situations throughout the game. The second half was a bit better until Darmstadt scored, was a very good timing for Darmstadt to score that goal, because after that, Regensburg didn't offer anything to really get points out of this, in my opinion. If you look at that first goal, huge mistake by Elvedi after that, but also good job by Tietz, perfect pass to Karic, and he doesn't, with the first touch of the ball, a very good goal. This is how you tell your coach, listen, if you consider what you're doing in the winter break, consider me, please. And just Regensburg defending for the second goal as well. I mean, obviously, if you're that late into the game, you try. I mean, the thing is, normally you say after you concede, you put it, go full risk, but Regensburg didn't do that. They didn't go on full risk and still conceded a very, very stupid goal. And so there's something Messenger which has to work on. I'm not quite sure how we are concerning the persona Max Bezushkov. I know there has been a lot of talks he might leave for Werder Bremen. I'm not quite sure if this can happen this winter or it happens next summer. But if they lose him, they really need some other creative part, because he has been the best player for Regensburg in this game. He was one of the few players actually trying to do something after halftime. He had three shots on target. But all in all, I mean, for Darmstadt, it has been a kind of weird weeks as well, with a win against St. Pauli. But then they had some couple of really games that you can't really put your finger on, and this was in a way similar, but also because Regensburg is not really as confident as they were at the beginning of the season. But same here, if we talk about what happened in the first game this season, because obviously we're already at the start of the second leg, really, really different points for both teams. I mean, Darmstadt had that whole COVID disaster at the beginning of his season. Regensburg with a very strong beginning, and actually it feels kind of weird. We're already in the second leg. I had the feeling like the second match day was like yesterday, but time flies. And I'm actually interested to see what both teams are returning with in the new year. I think the plan for Regensburg is very, very simple. First of all, do not concede goals. it sounds very stupid, but they concede way too many goals. Like, not even going back to winning days, but first of all, really, really, really put the focus on the defensive stability. And for Darmstadt, I mean, together with St. Pauli, Tim Eckstein put together a statistic with the help of Weisscout, actually very interesting. And both St. Pauli and Darmstadt are the teams that score more goals than they should have. And I want to quote Sandhausen, this both the best, they have the worst defense and the worst offense. Like, I'm quoting him here. Worst of all, Sandhausen. I mean, they're not bottom of the table, and Düsseldorf didn't manage to use that, but we'll talk about that later. To finish this, good result for Darmstadt. I think, as mentioned, the plans for Regensburg are pretty clear in that short winter break.
Yeah, they need almost a factory reset, Jan. The last, you know, 5 defeats in their last 6, as we mentioned in the intro to this game, no clean sheets in that time. You know, there is not really a lot to like with what they're doing defensively, and they were a bit unlucky in that regards defensively, especially maybe with the second goal. You know, yeah, they're obviously going to try and get a result. They get countered, and, you know, Kempe scores a brilliant goal. But they just, it almost felt as if it wasn't a case of if, but more or less when teams were going to figure out how to stop them scoring offensively. And in this case, we saw Darmstadt defend very, very well. Another clean sheet for them. And they enter the winter break very comfortable, two-game buffer to the teams below them, which include Hamburger SV and Schalke, who played the Saturday night kickoff game. And there's a lot to unpack in how you can interpret this game, but otherwise, looking at it, that Schalke should have won this game and should have won it comfortably. But the overall score was 1-1. Robert Glatzel opened his account on 2 minutes. Some pretty not great set piece defending led to Glatzel having a nice easy header. His third goal in his last 2 games. He's got 9 goals for the campaign. And from that moment onwards, from about the 10-minute mark onward, it was all Schalke. Competent, dominant, billions of shots on goal. They had 29 in total. But it only took until the 87th minute when Koti Takura got his second in 2 games to give Schalke a point. They should have got a lot more out of it. The one chance I can think of is the Darko Chernov one, where he dispossesses Sebastian Schonlau. And I'll never know how he didn't hit the target. It's unbelievable. It's egregious. It's considering he was very lively in this game, playing in the Bulter role. And when Bulter came on, of course, he had the impact. He has the assist. That beautiful Cruyff turn before setting up Itakura was brilliant. But enough probably about me getting upset about why this game was not a win for Schalke. Johansson was a good reason as to why Hamburg got a point, but I think that if we look at it from a Hamburg perspective, because I'll just cover Schalke, the fans were not happy. It's their 9th draw in 18 games, and despite them being in the top 3, not all is well at Haasvelle.
Yeah, I think it's very understandable that you were frustrated. I would have been as well. I mean, I watched a game Saturday night, and not only the highlights, and especially that scene where we were talking about with Chulinov. I think there are even 3 people against Johansson, and I was like, okay, this is like a goal, and it wasn't. actually quite interesting what Haier said, Moritz Haier said after the game. He said something like, paraphrasing here, I'm not sure they did enough to win this game in terms of deserving to win. Then my favorite sentence, Schalke had a number of good chances after the 1-0. I was like, so, okay, after the second minute. Yeah. It's like, it's not like you scored at the 30th minute or something like that. Like, basically, 90 minutes, Schalke had chances. And, yeah, I think this whole build-up play by Hamburg has its flaws. I remember when I saw them against Ingolstadt, Johansson, took forever to execute his shots, and for that, now they try to play more from the back and then build up, and you can do that. I know that from Bielefeld, we do that often, and we did it often in the Zweite Bundesliga, and fans weren't always happy, and even though we like actually conceded goals because we did it, even though I said, like, I'll still continue to do that. I mean, in this game, Hamburg should have like stopped doing that after the second mistake. But also, I mean, if your opponent doesn't really score out of these mistakes, maybe keep on going. I think maybe one player that kind of, one or two, I mean, with Shulinov and Zalazar, but especially Zalazar, he had only one out of his six shots on goal. Jesus Christ. was on target. And yeah, he has a minus 1.3 shot efficiency. He should have had like over three goals this season already. I have the feeling it should have been like six, at least in this game alone. So efficiency is a huge, huge problem by Schalke. In this game, the problem is like this game took for forever, yeah, and a lot happened, but at the same time it summed up very quickly. We're back to Hamburg, the ways before they played against them. They had those two home wins, or three home wins, I'm sorry. I mean, the funny thing is that I actually made that joke after the Glatzer goal. Okay, this is an early goal for Hamburg. This game is going to end 1-1. And I was already cursing myself until up to the 87th minute. But then finally, Schalke, gifted me with a goal. In the end, I think, once again, keep doing those when I remember the first games when they play together. I'm not sure about you, but I have the feeling what we said about both teams at the beginning of the season is still true now. Like, you, from time to time, for Hamburg as well as for Schalke, you see some developments. But as a fan of both teams, I haven't seen the developments I wanted to. And I actually had that conversation a couple of days ago where someone told me they're pretty sure Hamburg is going to get promoted this season, because although they have a lot of draws, they at least don't lose. Let's just say I'm not sure about that. I'm always wrong with that, so don't really listen to me there. But honestly, not sure. Wouldn't put my finger on it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, with Schalke, I've gotten the notes after the ultimate impression from me is that, you know, the football is not entirely attractive to watch. That's been understood since Skramotzis came in. I think they were a lot better in this game, especially when it came to counter pressing and really causing havoc from Hamburg wanting to play out from the back. But it's as weird as it sounds, it doesn't seem like Schalke has got the right mix up top, nor in the midfield. Like, they're still kind of chopping and changing. The defensive three is the defensive three. The back three is set. And I think Schalke, you can't be upset with Chiao, Kaminsky, and Itzkura. Those three have been really good since they've come together after that Regensburg game. They've been very, very strong. Defensively, they've gotten a lot better. It doesn't mean they're not prone to errors. It has happened, but I do like the fact that you see in attack, we saw Chiao got really, really forward on a lot of occasions in when Schalke were transitioning forward, and he even gets opportunities to have pings on goal because he puts himself in that position. So you like what, like there's like little spurts of where you're like, I see the direction, it can look good, but it's unsustainable. They can't sustain it. And actually this game was almost a good microcosm of that, because they had moments where they would dominate the game, they looked in control, and then Hamburg would have a good goal scoring opportunity from it. Whether it was Kittle's shot, honestly can't even remember the other ones because they had so little on goal. Yeah, it's I think they've had a to say that to be fourth considering all the drama or the perceived drama from the first 18 games, I think they'll take fourth place, but they know that this is a pivotal winter break. Whether they're going to bolster the squad, who knows, but must be better is pretty much this must be the way. Same with Hamburg. They don't really know where they're at. And I think a lot of teams in that pack that we're going to get to that are, you know, a point apart from like third to seventh, we just don't know. We really don't know. And it makes for a fascinating second half of the season. Let's take a break. And on the other side, we're going to head over to Hanover when they hosted Werder Bremen. Werder Bremen were hoping to make it 3 wins out of 3 under new coach Oli Werner. They took on a Hanover side that were hoping to get back to winning ways. Well, it's fair to say that Bremen are back, baby. It is time. They're going to make a run at the title. My prediction's going to be correct. Just kidding. But they have ended 2021 in a much better fashion. And it's fair to say that how good it is to have good coaching bring a team with such talent forward. Let's start. Romano Schmidt, who only seems to score good goals from outside the box, he opened the scoring on 22 minutes. But Hanover put in the red herring. You don't expect Sebastian Kerk to shoot from 40-plus yards out. And Jiří Pavlenka didn't think he was going to shoot from 40-plus yards out, as you can tell by his positioning. So then when Kerk scored from 40-plus yards out and made it 1-1, it's fair to say that the 5,000 strong that were at the HDI Arena were rather surprised that Hanover had equalised. But the shenanigans hadn't ended there. Marvin Dux got his 9th goal of the campaign against his former side when he headed it from just inside the 18-yard box to beat an unfortunate Martin Hansen. Anthony Jung, who was brilliant in this game, got on the score sheet, as did Marco Friedel. It's, wow. Whew. Bremen are back. I'm on the train. I'm on the train. Oli Werner, you know, Oli's at the wheel. And, but they were really, really good in this game. Again, they took control quite early. The free kick was unfortunate because, let's be honest, you're expecting a ball in. You're not expecting him to ping it in from that distance. But they just found a way. And 3 games, 3 wins, and each of those 3 games, they've scored 3 or more goals. They look so much different offensively than they did under Marcus Anfang. We knew it was going to take time with him. But Oli Werner has immediately unlocked the treasure chest and is reaping the reward so far.
Yeah, so the question is now, who is the German Pep Guardiola, Marcus Anfang, Oli Werner? as you mentioned, very dominant display by Werder Bremen. Although it didn't really have the effect it had in the second half, I loved how Werder had a very, very quick way getting into Hanover's 18-yard box. I think that was very, very impressive. Was quick movement, not a lot of passes to go there. It was very good. They didn't really create too many chances inside the box in the first half, so it kind of fits that Schmidt scored from outside of the box. Very poor defending by Franke, I think, for the Dutch goal was poor defending by Franz, who was probably for Hanover the best player was Linton Miner once again. Vekovic had a couple of problems with him, small disadvantages, but yeah, in the end, I think that Pavlenka was except that one mistake was quite good. And yeah, Hanover, they only had like two shots on target out of two shots on goal in the second half. And I think they were before Bremen scored. And yeah, I mean, we have that certain Werder fan who is really, really mad with us talking about XGs.
Oh, no.
Not doing this year, just saying that they're, well, we have been talking about that they're not very efficient. It changed. And Ole Werner, out of the, they had three shots on target in the second half and scored three goals out of nine shots on goal. I think it was pretty, pretty good. And yeah, just, it's amazing how Ole Werner managed to turn the team around so quickly. I mean, Werder fans have to be careful because I've already seen articles like because the last time a Bremen coach managed to win all three games in a row was under Thomas Schaaf. And this is the problem. You really have to be careful with expectations. Not downplaying anything Werder Bremen is doing, but the good thing is that, and this is, I think, Ole Werner's very strong side, that he has a very, very good way in talking to single players. I mean, Leonardo Bittencourt under Ole Werner has been brilliant. I know there has been talks with him also leaving the club in winter, which would obviously free some money. Mm. But I mean, yeah, I'm saying this since he took over. I think if there would have been a perfect coach to take over, it's definitely Werner. And I think what I've been saying last week as well, he knows what to say after games like this. I think he knows where to put him, where to analyze him. If we talk about new managers, Christoph Dabrowski has been confirmed as a new manager. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure he has that same quality as Werner does. I mean, he won twice with Hanover. But don't know about you, doesn't scream really they're going to take on this relegation fight in a good way. I mean, I'm happier than them taking Mirko Slomka back, obviously, but I don't know. Hanover, weird team to put for Werder. I think it's the perfect way to end a very weird and very disappointing 2021, obviously, because they got relegated. But if they play like this and even, yeah, I mean, it's clear, I think, that they always have to put 100% on the pitch because that's what you have to do in the Zweite Bundesliga. But I'm quite sure Ole Werner will find a way to do that as well in 2022.
Yeah, I think what they do in the winter will be quite fascinating, whether there'll be much change in terms of the squad. We know that they're going to try and shed a bit of that money that they've got after it really all backfired when they got relegated. But they are playing some very attractive football. And we talk about the importance of having a strong manager and having someone who can not only be good on the pitch, but also be good off the pitch in terms of how he manages players, how he speaks to the media, how he doesn't forge fake documents to avoid getting in, you know, to get a job. You know, that sees the eye test. And we know that during that off season in the summer, you know, Werder wanted Oli Werner. He was one of the guys that they were very seriously considering, and they couldn't come to pass. That's why they go with Anfang and, you know, the beginning of the end, really, in that regard. The Hanover situation's really strange. You know, Dabrowski was their U23 manager. You know, two wins out of the first four games he coaches. That's fine. My question is, doesn't feel like they've really learnt because they're bringing in another manager who doesn't really have any sort of Zweite Bundesliga or Dritte Liga experience. And that's a really, it's a big ask, considering that they are very much entrenched in that bottom four, bottom five fight to avoid relegation. It's a massive risk. It really is. It could work. It could pay off. Or it could we could be speaking in 3 months' time that they're looking for another manager. That's really what they're playing. So, yeah, we'll see. Let's move on. Paderborn and Heidenheim are our next game. Heidenheim looking to continue what has been a strong end to 2021, and they did so with a 2-1 win against RTP 07. It started on 63 minutes when Patrick Meinke opened the scoring to get his second of the campaign. Jonas Kolls got his first in Paderborn colours 2 minutes later, and Tim Kleinitz, who was once again lethal up top, getting his seventh goal of the campaign 9 minutes from time to give the visitors the win. As simple as it can be, they took advantage of the errors. Yannick Kutera gave the opening goal, Kleinitz on hand for the second, and they... In the last five games, them and I think it's Darmstadt are the best two teams in the Zweite Bundesliga, and they've put themselves in the points, in that points differential. Only goal difference separates them from being third at the moment. They're having a weird season. No one's really talking about them for being that they are, I don't know, the Freiburg of the Zweite Bundesliga. They've got the manager who's been there for a million years, but... They're having an incredible season, and to be sixth, considering they were a bit of an outside chance, they've had a good end to 2021.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the why that we're not really, like, we're not really talking about them, and other maybe because it's kind of, it's the expected in the unexpected, in a way, because we always know Heidenheim can take over that role. I think what you have this season is that you have more teams, more surprise teams at top, and due to the fact that we have those big clubs like Nuremberg, like HSV, like Schalke, like Bremen, constellations are a bit weird, and in a way Heidenheim does belong a bit more to that, yeah, to the not really surprise section, but the we kind of expect them to be here situation. And I think that's why the season has been so weird, because there have been so many games where they didn't show what we expect out of them. In this game, I think it's the Paderborn you might have expected at home throughout the season. I think they only had one good game at home where they actually got point, like, fair share of points. I think that was against Ingolstadt, if I remember correctly. I mean, they haven't been, yeah, as good as they should have been at home. Let's just put it like that. And due to the fact that they haven't won away from home as well last week's, they're at, not at that top stage anymore. They were like a month or one and a half ago. For Paderborn, I think they were the better team. Both teams did not like create a lot of shots on target, but Heidenheim was definitely better. We saw very rare error by Yannick Hult in this game. Quite a similar, maybe in a way, to what happened to St. Pauli against Kiel. Didn't really have enough people to manage that rebound, or not that concentration, but I really thought that defensively, although they only conceded two goals this game, Paderborn was very poorly defensively. I'm not sure what went wrong. I'm not sure that Lukas Kvasniel changed up the lineup, put in Platte very like directly after his return from his injury. I mean, I think for them, the similar to a couple of other teams, the winter break comes in a very good phase, in a way, because they definitely have to, I think, check in. Maybe also, I still have the feeling that this whole Kvasniok thing is kind of hanging over their head. So maybe they need just, they need a talk to get everything out of the open. Yeah, and good result for Heidenheim, but as mentioned, kind of the expected and the unexpected.
Yeah, I think the thing with Paderborn, and you look at the numbers with their home form, and it's really strange considering the season they've had. They've played 10 home games, only won two of them, lost 5-3 draws. They haven't kept a clean sheet at home. That is usually a bit of a problem, and it underlies, you know, other unfortunate incidences with them. You know, the two wins they've had were 2-1, were both 2-1 victories against Ingolstadt, as you mentioned, and I think it was St. Pauli they beat at home. Yes, St. Pauli 3-1. So that's a massive issue, not being able to keep a clean sheet at home. That's where you should be at your defensive best. But yeah, they look a bit out of form, to be honest, and that's they almost fall in the same category as Jan Regensburg. They had the strong start. They had that period where they were top of the table, and since then it's kind of fallen away, winless in their last five, and you know, only they are actually equal with Hansa Rostock and Erzgebirge Aue form wise, which is a massive, massive problem. Let's go on to our final Group 2 game. Ingolstadt against Dynamo Dresden. This was a massive game for Ingolstadt. They've had a horrible time of it. Third manager, and of course, we mentioned last week, Rüdiger Rehm is in charge, and the Rehmolution is on as Ingolstadt took a 3-0 win. That seems to have ended all things. I guess the podcast is over then. 3-0 for Ingolstadt. They beat Dynamo Dresden. It started super, super early. Niko Antonic got his first goal of the season inside 60 seconds. Then Kevin Eilers was in the unfortunate position after Stefan Kuchka's header cannoned into his head and into his own net. And then substitute Philip Bilbia got his third goal of the campaign to give Ingolstadt a 3-0 win. It is the first win since match day 5. He managed to do a lot more in two games than Andre Schubert did in 8. A massive win for FCE. At least they've got something to hold on to. And a clean sheet! It is what their fans have waited for all season long. A clean sheet, a win, and a very Merry Christmas for Ingolstadt.
Yeah, I was shortly... Yeah, I wanted to say Eva has left this podcast after Rehmolution. Jesus Christ. I know that you don't drink Glühwein, otherwise I would have asked if you had one cup too many. As you've mentioned, very good game by Ingolstadt, especially good football, I think, for their standards. Dresden's really poor. I mean, what I liked about Ingolstadt is that they managed to really, really shut down Königsdorfer up front. Didn't really came to a lot of chances. And I mean, if you score your first goal after 1 minute and then like after 20 minutes you're already 2-0 up, and two goals kind of through headers. I mean, the second one was an own goal, but nevertheless, and that duo Kuchka-Beister worked very well for Ingolstadt in this game. I think still, like in the second half, Ingolstadt could rely on that 2-0 because Dresden didn't really offer much. I mean, they had the XG of 0.31. That's not a lot. They had one single shot on target. They weren't really confident in this game compared to Ingolstadt. This is really what Rüdiger Rehm wanted them to see. And as you've mentioned, you see a lot of improvement compared to what André Schubert did. And you still ask why they took that detour of him. I mean, obviously, Rüdiger Rehm was employed at Wiesbaden throughout this season, but still... if you see what you can do to a team if you have the correct manager. And I mean, Ingolstadt had plenty of games against sides that were with them in this bottom table. And they never really managed to win those. except one. And yeah, it's a really good result for them. I think definitely something we will love to go into to the winter break. And for Dynamo Dresden, I mean, they have been in a weird state as well. I mean, they had this number of games where they lost, not only didn't win, but actually lost the games. Had a very good start at the season. Once again, I think this is what really keeps them in the game. Otherwise, I think they would have been in a similar position as Sandhausen and Ingolstadt are. Yeah, interesting to see how, I mean, I think Ingolstadt is still in a very similar position to Würzburg and Wien the past 2 years. But maybe they kind of found the right manager at the right time and can turn it around. But it's just like a big, big if still, in my opinion, because just from the teams, I mean, I think only, sorry, Lewis, with only, like, if you look at Sandhausen, yeah, they're kind of, if you say it like that, that probably Sandhausen, Ingolstadt and Aue are probably not only table-wise, but also everything they have to offer, the worst team in the league at the moment. And yeah, for Ingolstadt, really right time to turn it around. If they turn it around, big if.
That's right. It's a big if. But they were, yeah, as Eva said, they were very, very good in this game. They did a lot with very little. You know, they, considering how little of the ball they actually had, they actually made a lot of it, created a lot of good opportunities. They probably could have added a fourth. Eka Ayensa had that opportunity, which was well saved by Kevin Braul. A very, very good, promising performance, and to be fair, easily their best performance of the entire season so far. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we are going to review the final three matches of Match Day 18. We're going to start with Karlsruhe and Hansa Rostock. Karlsruhe were hoping to make it 3 wins from their last 4 when they welcomed Hansa Rostock to the Wildparkstadion. Karlsruhe won this fixture in Match Day 1, 3-1, and it didn't start in a particularly good fashion for them. Pascal Breer opened the scoring on 7 minutes when he was able to turn Fabian Schleusner inside out and score past Marius Gersbeck. Daniel Gordon has had the resurgence this season. Many wouldn't have thought he would have been a regular starter in this team. He scored his second goal in 13 minutes. Philip Hoffman made it 2-1 for the host on 26 minutes, and it all looked like Karlsruhe were going to take the 3 points once again. However, Rostock turned up the wick in the second half and had the best of it, and on 82 minutes, it was Breer again who was able to give Rostock a point. Karlsruhe almost stole the game back in the dying stages through Fabian Schleusner, but Marcus Kolker makes an incredible save to parry it onto the crossbar and out. It's the points shared in this one. Two teams that have had pretty indifferent seasons. Rostock have really struggled of late to find victories. A good result for them, but you could say that they had their opportunities to make more of it.
Yeah, but I mean, they started off the game very, very well. Yeah, KSC's defending work was rather poor. Then KSC had their first chance after that free kick, scoring this goal. I mean, you really have to talk about not letting Daniel Gordon being that open. Obviously, Kaiser was better after that goal, and obviously after Hoffman scored as well. Also seemed a bit shocked. They only had like one real chance after that in the second half, which came due to a Gersbeck mistake, which I think Rich Munsey could induce. You could see maybe in a way they were missing John Verhoek. I think he was out for a yellow card suspension or something like that. Maybe you needed that cold-blooded striker up front who has scored, I think, the majority or at least like more or less 50% of the goals. I think Rostock scored 21 goals, and he scored 10 out of them. Yeah, so nearly 50% of their goals. Yeah, and the second half was way better by Rostock, and this is what you have been talking about, that this should have been the this should have been the half that where they won this game. Maybe they scored that equalizer just a little bit too late. Actually, there were two saves by Koika I want to point out. One was from I think open play as well. Very strong. I mean, he had four shots on target and managed to save the two out of them. 50% always seems not as good, but if you already conceded two goals, I mean, if you save the other two ones that Karlsruhe is attempting, that's a good read as well. And as you've mentioned as well, I mean, I think for the first one, I think that was really all Kolke because really, really good save. But the second one, I think a bit of luck came as well because I mean he has very quick reactions, but if he's unlucky, the ball touches the wrong side of the crossbar kinda, and then it still goes in. Was a very close call, but it wouldn't have been deserved if Karlsruhe would won this. I think in a way, for both teams, it's fitting how that year, how that season, how first leg of the season ended, or this 2021 ended. I think shows both teams where they're at. I think for Rostock, it was very important not losing this game due to the other results, bottom half of the table. But yeah, I think in the end, you had two different halves, and a team who couldn't really make everything out what they should have done.
Yeah, I think this is becoming a repeating trend with Hansa Rostock this season, where they have games where they are either the better side or at least seem to really present themselves as the team that is going to go out and win the game, and then they fail to do so. And we've mentioned it constantly that it will bite them in the backside if they're not able to win these types of games. And even though it's an away game and technically their form is a lot better away from home, they missed the opportunity. This was an opportunity against a team that had been relatively good form, but is quite vulnerable, and teams have been able to pick them apart. It's just it sums up their first half of the season in the back in the Zweite Bundesliga. Missed opportunities because they've had a ton of them where they should have really picked up the 3 points, and in the end they either come away with none, or in this case they come up with one. Let's move on to Erzgebirge Aue hosting Nuremberg. A massive game for both clubs. With all the results happening around them, this became a pretty important game for Erzgebirge Aue. But one person in particular decided it was going to be all about him and him only. His name was Nikola Dovidan. He scored a hat trick in this game, easily his best performance for at least 2 or 3 seasons in the Zweite Bundesliga. It means that Nürnberg are now equal in that logjam on 30 points. They sit P5 heading into the winter break. And, should we start the positives or the negatives? Because the positives, it was all Nürnberg, and amazingly, Dovidan could have had more than 3 goals. He had that missed chance just before his second, which I'll never know how he missed that. But he was outstanding and really the driving force. But an important game for him because his spell at Nürnberg has not been great by any stretch of the imagination. They've had a few coaching changes, and nothing's really worked out. But he needed a game, a performance like this, and he showed the individual quality that we know he can produce.
Yeah, I wanted to say easily his best performance in the Nuremberg colours. I really loved also how him and Shuranov worked together, and in especially in the first half. I think that the way they were open for each other worked very well. Actually, quite interestingly, had not this as a record, but we had eight goals in the first 50 minutes this match day. Actually quite impressive in a way, or surprising, or whatever, season of giving and all that. Yeah, but the I mean, obviously, really, really good display by Nuremberg. Sometimes you just need that individual brilliance, or just one player has a very good day. With Nuremberg, they had it. Otherwise, not quite sure they would have won that so easily, because, yeah, out of 20 shots on target, 20 shots on goal, I'm sorry, 5 came from Dovedan. On the other hand, you had Auer. They had actually more shots on goal than Nuremberg. Mm. But only a seventh out of that was on target. And that is very worrying. I mean, that in a way, Auer was lucky that Jan Hoshaj took that shot. Because I think if in a way Nazarov would have put his... in a way... would have taken his side of control for that goal, it would have been offside. I think in a way they were hoping after the equalizer, it's going to be the typical our home game, where they're just going to stand solid in defense and let the rest, like, let the opponent run and run and run and not really getting enough out of it. I think they really lost that because, first of all, Dovedan, but also because their in-box defending is still pretty, pretty passive. They normally have the majority in players in the box, but don't really manage to use them in the right way, or the communication isn't good. Since Hensel took over, things have improved. But I think... yeah, for me, not in the way they should have. On the other side, on the other hand, the question is always, how much room do you have for improvement? Mm-hmm. I think for our this season, this room to fill is nearly full, because you've lost two of your best players in Florian Krüger and Pascal Testroth. One of them actually playing for the direct opponent in this relegation fight, and that doesn't help. And then you have to rely on players like Jan Hochscheid who aren't the youngest anymore. And to be honest, I mean, it's always very frustrating if you lose good players, but in my opinion, they just didn't do enough to cover their losses. And they're kind of really getting the results for that now. That's my small take on it's going to be now.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to really describe where they're at as a football club, because, you know, we look back at the start of the season and was Alexei Shpilevsky the right person to begin with, a young, untried manager.
Very proud that you managed to after a couple of months, yep. You still managed to remember how to pronounce his name right.
as am I, you know, it's we take pronunciation seriously on this podcast, and yes, I will admit that I sometimes make the gaffes, but I got this one right, which is good, and I didn't laugh while I was about to pronounce his name. The great thing about the league is it gives opportunity for those to, it's a good proving ground, and you can determine whether they can succeed, but they didn't really give him the infrastructure to succeed. And as we saw, he struggled to get results. Mark Hensel, who'd been an assistant under Shpilevsky, under Dirk Schuster, he's been around the club quite some time, was the guy who understood how the club worked. He clearly expects just, you know, give it your best shot kind of attitude. And you can see it's all tactically, you can see where they lack, and teams are able to pick them apart, and there's a reason why they've lost 4 games on the bounce, and things are looking a bit problematic. They desperately need a striker. 15 goals is the second worst in the league, or third worst technically, because 2 teams have scored fewer goals, and that's Ingolstadt and the team we'll talk about next. But yeah, and defensively, they gave away 4 high-quality chances, and 3 of them were taken by one particular player, Nikola Dovedan. So not a great end to 2021 for Erzgebirge Aue. Nürnberg in that peloton of teams that are on the precipice of the playoff, but they're also only a couple of games away from direct promotion. Ouch. And finally, we've made it. Our final game of 2021, match day 18. Fortuna Düsseldorf and Sandhausen. And this very much feels like a self-inflicted injury in many regards. The same old frustrating Fortuna, because it was one goal that did them over in the end. When Sebio Suku found Pascal Testroit, that's it. Pistol Paco is very much in full swing. 6 goals this season. He scored on 7 minutes. And that was enough. That was all but enough to see Sandhausen take the 3 points. They had their chances in this game, Fortuna. They really, really did. But for goodness sakes, how frustrating in front of a solid, well, I guess it was capacity for what they were allowed in the stadium. Just frustrating. I couldn't imagine what it'd be like to be a Fortuna fan in this day and age, because they were just, yeah, no words to describe. They defended well. They limited Sandhausen to 4 shots. And the 15 they had, they only managed 3 on target. And, of course, no goals.
I mean, I would love to call it the Bielefeld connection with Suku and Testroth. Obviously, both played at Armenia. I mean, as a Bielefeld fan, and you obviously as a Schalke fan, I do think we feel for Düsseldorf fan, because we've all been at that stage. But honestly, I don't really see Christian Preußer surviving this Christmas break. And if he does, I'm pretty sure he's not going to survive for long. And that would be very stupid then, because obviously you have that transfer window in winter, and if you get a new coach, you should try to get him on and kind of decide a bit who is coming on, or at least, yeah, have the actual time to implement that. For Sandhausen, I mean, if you score that early in the game, and then defensively, you have a brilliant goalkeeper, but also manage to not let Düsseldorf get those dangerous shots on target. It's good defending. And I mean, those are the games you have to win if you're in the bottom 3. And they did manage to do that, and especially against the team. And this is what I was really missing from the Düsseldorf side. I mean, they knew if Sandhausen is going to win against them, they're only 3 points apart, I think. And this wouldn't be the reaction I want to see from a team I know that they're, can be dangerous to themselves. I mean, they had shots on target, and I mean, Christian Preußer tried to change formation to a 4-3-3 after halftime with Petersen on. I had the feeling a bit more happened going forward, but they were really, really missing that accuracy up front. And then obviously there was this discussion with a handball by Benchop. And honestly to God, I do not know how Hamels must thought this is the handball. It's very clearly like breast part, upper body part. Had to laugh a bit because the commentator for the highlights said, this is honestly the right way to use the VAR, was taking the penalty away. I was like, yeah, this is like, you shouldn't praise them for that, because it shouldn't have been that way, a difficult decision to not give that handball. Because just from the way the ball deflects, is, for me, it's pretty clear. It cannot be the hand. It was then maybe upper shoulder, but that's still not hand. I know that Lewis didn't really know what was going on there. So, funny thing. If you look who was the referee, I'm not that surprised anymore. For Düsseldorf, what a way to end 2021. Still saying, not seeing any improvement to Overrusla from last year. In my opinion, they need a new head coach. I don't see any kind of idea going forward, except relying on Hennings and maybe a bit Pettersson. And Narai for showing his individual talent. That's just too less for Fortuna Düsseldorf. And sorry saying that harshly, but just as someone who watches them every week, not maybe every time 90 minutes, but just in a way, this was one of the worst games I've seen this season, probably. Although there were plenty of shots, but yeah, this, nah.
All I'm going to say is we desperately need a rescue Christopher Pedersen campaign, because he's incredibly, he's just underutilized, because every time he comes on or he starts, he makes things happen. You know, he puts the ball into the corridor of carnage and things happen. Why? And I know there are Fortuna supporters who are like, why doesn't he get more game time? Why doesn't he start? Great question, because they look more likely when he is on the pitch. I know we haven't seen a lot of Appelkamp for whatever reason, because we know how good he was last season and just nothing. And just, they're just, I don't know where they're at, really. Just awful, awful situation. They have a lot to ponder heading into this winter break. I think they're another team that they might really be where they are realistically, but I think with the squad they've got, they need to be better. They've been pretty disappointing. Big win for Sandhausen, of course. They really needed that victory, and they held on just. As per usual, we like to end with our kick tip and our podcast, or just our general recommendations. Heading into the winter break, our leader is going to be Max Jakob Ost, of course, the host of the Rasenfunk, Meister Keller, and Elf Lieben. 180 points he heads into the break. Congratulations, Suna Verda. For the second time this season, was victorious for the round with 17. I know that I am getting lasers through the webcam and through my chest. Our recommendations for the week, I will start with, you should definitely go check out Lewis Ostrowski's Zweite Bundesliga Hinrunde review. That is at Bundesliga Fanatic. Definitely well worth the read. He goes through all the teams from the first 17 match days. Go check it out and give him a follow. Great fella, and he provides great content on his feed. Eva, what do you recommend to end 2021?
It's not a podcast this time. It's something else. And I mean, we have the winter break. We have all of time to read after we filled our bellies with food and sweets and stuff and sleep a lot and get out of prisons. I actually have a recommendation of a book. Haven't read it myself, but because a couple of weeks ago we recommended a piece by Jonathan Harding about players, athletes, and mental health, and he actually wrote a whole book about it. It's called Soul Beyond the Athlete, and he talks about how the development as a person besides as a player for young football players. He speaks with a lot of people, coaches, psychologists, teachers, you have a couple of different chapters country-wise, like Germany, England, North America, and then you also talk about psychology, well-being, and obviously the last chapter is called Soul. It's his second book after Mensch, and I highly recommend buying it, although it's only available on Amazon at the moment, and normally I'm not a huge fan buying books at Amazon. It's the only way to get it, at least in Germany at the moment. So if you want to have a good read in that winter break, highly recommend that book.
You can also buy it from the Oakley Books store. It's £12 if you use that. That should be available now, actually. So you can add that to the cart. Very cheap. But to be honest, it's an absolute bargain if you're looking for a final Christmas present for the football fan of the family. That's it. We are done. It has been a long 2021. There's been so many ups and downs, and we are so thankful that you have come along for the ride each and every week. Eva, it is always a pleasure to have you alongside me to discuss all the action from the week, the weekend, I wouldn't do it with anybody else. It has been an absolute thrill, and I look forward to doing it
right
again.
Right back at you. Looking forward to 2022.
Amen. And that's it. Let's sign off. We hope that you all have a happy holidays, a fantastic new year, and we hope you will join us again on 19th of January when we discuss all the action from Match Day 19. Until then, stay safe and goodbye.